Yo, what's good, everybody? What's good? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. In full effect, after week five, we're going into week six. We are in, I would say, we're past a quarter of the season. I think it's always interesting in terms of, like, we're getting closer and closer to, like, okay, week eight used to be, like, the halfway point. Now that, you know, we got 17 weeks. I mean, I guess we can still consider it the halfway point, but you get the gist. We are close to the halfway point, and I feel like we're about a month in. We know what teams are good. We know what teams are, like, we know, we kind of have a sense of most of where most of the league is heading and where it's going. But first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kitt of the Isaiah Kitt Podcast. Grateful and gracious that appreciative that everybody is tapping in and listening. To everybody that's listening, if you're a first time listener, if you are a regular listener, if you are a maybe this is your second time listening, shouts out to you. Maybe this is your second or third time listening, shouts out to you. I know the NBA season is on its way. We've actually had some preseason games, some preseason action, and so forth. So I think I always say this, but October in sports is always like a really interesting time, because probably the most interesting time if you're like a sports junkie, because you get a little bit of everything. Like, you get playoff baseball, obviously you get football, and you get NFL and college football, right? On Saturdays, Sundays, Thursdays, Mondays, you know, so There's usually like football most of the week. But then you get basketball. Basketball's gonna be coming on, and basketball comes on pretty much every night. NBA, that's an every night type of thing. 82 games. So October is really, really a good time in sports. Once the NBA get rolling here, we literally will have like every day of the week there will be a game on. Whether it's a playoff matchup in baseball or an NBA regular season matchup, or if it's college football, NFL, I think hockey even starts too. So if you're a hockey guy or hockey person, you know, that's good too. So obviously going into week five, I think undoubtedly the game of the week that everybody had circled around the league was Cowboys 49ers. The Niners, they seem to look like one of, if not the best team in football. They have definitely been probably the most dominant over the past, over the first 5 weeks and so forth. And the Cowboys, with their explosive defense and, you know, Mike McCarthy, like, it was the game of the week, undoubtedly. And everybody, I saw the rating, the stats for that game. It was 26 million viewers. Sunday Night Football, 26 million viewers. That's how many people watched that game on Sunday night. But boy, I tell you, the 49ers dominated in every sense of imagination. Literally, dominated in every fashion of the game. I mean, we can start with coaching. I think it was an absolute coaching clinic and mismatch. 49ers coaching staff, Kyle Shanahan, like, completely outcoached Dan Quinn, Mike McCarthy, like, on both sides of the football. Special team, like, the Niners did it all. And that begs the question, like, are the 49ers this good, or were the Cowboys a little overrated? And me personally, it could be a little bit of both, right? Maybe the Cowboys aren't in the same class or the same tier as the Niners and the Eagles. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're just a notch below them. Maybe. That perhaps could be the case, right? But I also think the Niners are that good. Like, I think they're that good. So I'm trying to get a sense of, because everybody was really super, like I say, everybody was tuned and glued to this game. And for obvious reasons, and I think some of it was the buildup where Cowboys coming off a convincing win versus the Patriots, The Niners, like I said, the Niners have been crushing and killing shit all year since the year started, right? So the buildup was there. Both of these teams really defensive oriented. The Niners, I think, have better skill guys than the Cowboys, right? I think they're a little bit more versatile, a little bit more creative offensively. But like the Niners defense is absolutely phenomenal. The Cowboys defense is maybe it's a tick overrated, but it's a really good defense. It's one of the fastest and most physical defenses in football, right? And the Cowboys, it's kind of funny because I think their defense is really physical and they're used to being the bullies. Like in most of the games that they play, they're used to being the fastest, the most physical team, and like the bully team. And it just seems like every time they come up against the Niners play really similar where they're fast and they're physical, but the Niners just seem faster and more physically imposing, and they give the Cowboys a little bit of their own medicine, and Dallas doesn't quite know how to bounce back. Like, that's what it is. But then you also take into account that, hey, the playoff game from last year, where it was a 19-12 score, and, you know, a lot of people's takeaway from that game was, hey, man, you know, Dak's interceptions, Dak turnovers, if you've removed those Dak turnovers, hey, the Cowboys, they got a good shot to win. I think that was a lot of people's conclusion of that game and how we viewed that game. We viewed that NFC divisional round playoff game last year as, hey, I mean, the Niners, they're the Niners. They play really well. But the Cowboys, they only lost by 7. Like, they were right there. If you eliminate those Dak turnovers, or if Dak can just play better in that spot, Cowboys probably win that game. Like, it's a good chance they can win that game. It was very much in reach, like, in winnable victory distance, right? So that was the thing. And I think a lot of this, once again, it's based upon the coaching and the quarterback. I think in these type of big games where both teams are, like I said, I think the Niners are better, right? But let's just say, for conversation, talking points sake, when teams are really, you got two really high-end good teams, a lot of it comes down to coaching and quarterback play, right? And you can't help. I don't like to pair, like, when quarterbacks are playing against each other, I don't like to put them up against each other because they're not playing against each other. They're playing against their defenses, right? But it is, you can't help but to look at Brock Purdy and you look at him and he's like the model of efficiency. And you can't help but look at Dak, where kind of struggled and look rattled versus this Niners defense. You can't help but compare, right? And I try to find, especially when I'm talking about these quarterbacks, as I think it's a lot in the sport, but I try to find the median in these things, right, when talking about certain guys. And if you guys notice, when I do like my quarterback breakdowns, or I talk about, you know, a variety of quarterbacks, I think Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and the high-end guys, I think those guys are really, really good. And I love talking about them. I love watching them. Herbert, I love watching them. But I think the biggest controversy or the most of the conversation, because we know Patrick Mahomes is great, right? Like, he's the best quarterback in football. Like, there shouldn't be an argument, right? We know Josh Allen is really good, right? I mean, he can be a little sloppy with the football, but he's really, really good. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But I think our biggest conversation in terms of NFL quarterbacks and our biggest controversy come, okay, once you get past those high-end, like, no doubt about it, elite guys, those tier one guys, the tier two guys are the most interesting, because that's where you have your Dak, your Kirk Cousins, your Tua's, your Brock Purdy. Like, you have those caliber of guys where they're like, they're not special. Like, they don't have this special arm trait or physical act. Like, they don't have that, right? But they do something or a couple things well enough where if you put a good roster around them, they can win you ball games. You put a competent enough roster around guys like Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins and Tua Tagovailoa, you know, there's, you know, those guys, you know, those guys that I'm referring to, those tier two-ish type of guys. You put a good situation around them, they can win you 10, 11 ball games any given year. Now, with Dak, he's one of those guys. He is one of those guys where he is highly discussed, and there is a lot of mixed reviews about Dak Prescott. Like, Dak is that, if you, like, I don't know a restaurant that has mixed reviews, but everybody knows that restaurant or that fast food place where it's like you enjoy it and you know it's not the best, but it's pretty good. And then some of them, like, I wouldn't even want to eat that. And that's Dak Prescott. Like, some people, I think most of us can agree that Dak is somewhere between the 10th or somewhere between the 10th or the 12th, 13th best quarterback in the league, right? That's where he is coming into this year, right? That's where he's about. That's where he's always been about, right? So there's a lot of mixed reviews, and he's been better than what anyone could have thought or would have thought coming out of Mississippi State. And he's been better than when he was drafted, right? But at a certain point, he tops out and he hits a ceiling. And I told you guys this a couple weeks ago when I was talking about the red zone struggles and inefficiencies. He has limitations. Obviously, you try your best to cover it up, and sometimes that's not even enough. But like I said about Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott in the comparison, you cannot, it is inevitable that you compare the two and you see Brock Purdy look really, really poised and comfortable. And like his comfortability and his confidence is at a whole nother level. And then you look at Dak on the other side and you look at their salaries, and it kind of highlights what San Francisco has been able to build and what the Cowboys have turned into. Because once upon a time, the 49ers, they once had Jimmy Garoppolo on an expensive deal, but he got them to a Super Bowl, and they were really productive with Jimmy Garoppolo. But the 49ers quickly realized, first, he was often banged up and hurt. And if they wanted to keep the notion of going on, of, you know, the notion of them having the most talented team in football, something was going to have to give. So, you know what they did? You can't put too much stock or so much money or a percentage of money at a position, especially the quarterback position, because it makes 2 to 3 times more than some other important positions, right? But you especially can't give a percentage of your salary cap to a guy who has limitations. Because when you do that, you eliminate the fact that you now don't have as much salary cap in money to fix the holes in your roster, right? And if your quarterback who has limitations, if he's not good enough to overcome the holes or the gaps in your roster, you particularly don't want to give him big time money. Now, like I said, now if you have like Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, those guys are good enough to somewhat erase or hide the fact that there might be a hole in your secondary, or there might be, you know, maybe you don't have a good left guard. Right? Those guys can kind of overcome that. Maybe you don't have a legitimate number 2 or number 3 receiver. those guys are good enough to overcome and cover those holes. But you may not, but with Dak and Kirk Cousins and these type of like caliber quarterbacks, they don't necessarily have the wiggle room, the talent, and the capabilities to overcome a subpar coach, a glaring deficiencies in the they can't overcome those type of situations. Or you can't ask them to overcome these type of situations and take it to the promised land. Like, that's just not going to happen. And that is where the Cowboys are. The 49ers, quickly, they realized that Jimmy Garoppolo was not going to be that guy. And they paid him, but they moved off of him. Moved up in the draft to draft Trey Lance. Inevitably, that didn't work. And then later in that same draft, they drafted Brock Purdy, who they have now, who he's not even making $1 million. Right? He's not even making $1 million. So they have all of this flexibility to stack their roster. And when you look at the Cowboys, they're ultimately in a position where Dak takes up a lump sum of their salary cap. And the Cowboys have done a fairly decent job at filling out their roster. But think about how good they were, or how good or how well-balanced their roster was when Dak first entered the league. They had a pretty good defense, right? They had arguably the best offensive line in football. They had a really superstar young running back. They had pretty good wide receivers, right? That offensive line is not the same. You know, Tyler Smith, he's young, but the Cowboys think they may have something special in him, which I probably agree. I think he's really good. But Tyron Smith, this might be his last year with all of the injuries that he's piled up over the years, right? Zach Martin's really good, but he's sometimes been nicked up. But Dak in these big games, he leaves a lot to be desired. He leaves a lot to be desired. And that's just the case. That's just the fact of it. So, and this is kind of like, you know, you look at a guy like Tua where he's having a pretty decent year. And if I was a betting man, I'd probably bet that the Dolphins make the playoffs and Tua finishes with some really, really awesome numbers. But it begs the question, how do the Dolphins pay him? Do they take care of him and pay him top dollar type of money like Burrow, Herbert, Lamar type money? Or do they give him on the lower scale of that like Daniel Jones type money or something like that, or Geno Smith type money? You gotta pick and choose. But this is kind of shows you the two directions and where the 49ers once had an expensive quarterback, no longer there, because they realized it was two red flags. First, he was already nicked up, banged up. Second, he had too many limitations. And if they're gonna pay him like that, they can't afford. They didn't have the wiggle room to have, you know, one or two holes in their roster, and then also their quarterback, who they're playing 20% of their salary cap to. They couldn't afford for him to have limitations either, right? Something has to give. And they moved on. They continued to build their roster. They have the best roster probably in football, and they have a young quarterback that they're paying pennies for, essentially, when you compare it up to some of these other guys. And I think this kind of speaks to it. Like, those, you know, Jalen Hurts, for instance, and I'm not picking on Jalen Hurts, but I'm looking at the situation he's around. And with Jalen Hurts, he got the big time extension, but his extension money does not kick in yet. He is still on his rookie deal. So he's still making his rookie money. So it does not count against the Eagles cap quite yet. But the Eagles over the past couple years have been able to build out their roster, and they have put a God squad around Jalen Hurts. Now, when that extension money kicks in, and we kind of already witnessed it with the two coordinators, with Steichen leaving, and their defensive coordinator leaving, right? We kind of witnessed, you know, they kind of struggling to find an identity a little bit, right? But we'll see Jalen Hurts in his second contract when that starts, where, you know, Philly, he takes up a percentage of the cap, and Philly can't retain some of the same guys, high-end, high-level guys that they have had over the past couple years, because they're paying Jalen Hurts and they're paying AJ Brown and they're paying such and such, right? They got to pay those, you're going to pay Jalen Carter, you know, he's really good, right? So we're going to see, like, that second contract kind of tells the story, and it's the tale of the tape, and it separates the guys who were, you know, who were dudes when they had all the talent around them and their contract, and, you know, their contract was cheap. They weren't making much, and the team was able to put a filthy squad around them. And then that second contract hit, you know, was the team winning because of this particular person, or were they winning in spite, right? And I think with Brock Purdy, for instance, I think Brock Purdy, there were some people that argued, hey, you know, Kyle, he has a Hall of Fame left tackle. He has Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey. He has all these pieces. The 49ers are certainly, they're surely not winning because of Brock Purdy, right? But then you look at the tape, Brock Purdy is no longer not trying to lose games for the 49ers. Like, he's not playing it safe. There ain't a lot of dinking and dunking. No. Brock Purdy is not only trying, like, he's winning games. He's winning games for the 49ers. And that's a different element that the Niners didn't have with Jimmy Garoppolo. Right? Garoppolo, there weren't a lot of examples and occasions where Garoppolo was, like, winning games for the 49ers. No. The 49ers were winning games, and Garoppolo was a part of that, and he wasn't losing them games. But Purdy is kind of separating himself, where he is winning games for the 49ers. And, you know, Christian McCaffrey, the supporting cast around him is awesome, right? Like, awesome. McCaffrey's probably he's the best back in football. Kittle is not the best tight end in football. I think Kelsey's better. But in terms of pass, the combination of pass with run blocking and then pass catching, Kittle is as good as anybody. Brandon Ayuk has turned into their number one receiver. Trent Williams, the best left tackle in football. Like, they have a lot of pieces. And they have a lot of, like, elite, high-end, high-caliber guys. But Brock Purdy, he is winning them games. Brock Purdy went out and won them. He won them that Cowboy game. Like, the Cowboys' focus defensively was, we are not going to let Christian McCaffrey beat us. They were stacking the box. They forced Brock Purdy to beat them, and Brock Purdy beat them. Brock Purdy beat them. He beat the Cowboys with his arm. And his escapability, his mobility, is he's not Lamar Jackson, right, or Josh. Like, he doesn't have crazy mobility, but it's good enough. His arm isn't the strongest like Mahomes or Herbert or Allen, but, like, he's making throws down the field, right? Like, he doesn't turn over the football. Like, he is making plays down the field, and he looks really, really confident doing it. But with Dak, like I said, and I kind of talk about this, he has limitations. We all know that about Dak. He has limitations. With that, coaching has to be better. Creativity in terms of an offensive play calling standpoint has to be better. But ultimately, you look at the financial and the salaries of the Cowboys and the 49ers, and you see what the Niners did a couple years ago with Garoppolo, and you see how it's panned out. Now, some might say that's luck, because the guy that they intended to be the next, you know, the starter isn't even the starter. Ironically, he's on the Cowboys and Trey Lance. But regardless, the whole plan was, we want a young quarterback on a rookie deal so we can load up our roster and have the best football, have the best roster in football. And I'd be damned. The Niners, they have the best roster in football. They do. They do. And in a talent, the Patriots are completely devoid of that. And it's gotten so bad in New England. Belichick, Patriots, over the last two games, they've been outscored 72-3. And there's executives and GMs around the league, obviously anonymously, and they're like, hey, the Patriots just don't have no talent. Like, they have no talent. But all of these decisions were made by Belichick. And I'm looking at Belichick's contemporaries. And by the way, let me say this before I go in like a whole tangent. Anything that I'm saying about Belichick right now, it is not to discredit the two decades worth of dominance that we saw from Brady and Belichick and the Patriots. So it's not to discredit that. And for my money, Belichick, he's probably been the coach of my generation, right? Like he has been the best. I just think his ways, his philosophies, and how he thinks and look at football in terms of like offensively and just skill players, I think the game has passed him. And I've made these statements for years now. It's kind of funny to say that because I've been making these statements and these claims for years. And I can for myself, and I'll be honest, I was calling out Belichick and the lack of talent at certain skill spots when in Brady's last year. It didn't just start like after Brady left. Like, no. If people remember correctly, the Patriots, they had a pretty good record. They went to the playoffs, but they lost a home playoff game to the Titans. They lost a home playoff game to the Titans. And that playoff game is so memorable because the Patriots, just even with Tom Brady, couldn't muster up anything offensively, and they look so bad offensively, it had you wondering, damn, what the hell is wrong with Tom Brady? But then Tom Brady goes to Tampa, he gets, you know, better weapons on the outside, Tom puts up pretty good numbers, and Tampa ends up winning the Super Bowl. In the years that Tom was in Tampa, they were playoff contenders, right? Like, up until, like, his last year, they weren't that good. But his first couple years in Tampa, they were NFC contenders. And it started then. I called it out then. I think that was probably the first year I started my podcast. That I called it out then, where they just didn't have enough offensively. But then it's kind of like Brady. The good thing about Brady was he was essentially the eraser that covered up some of Bill's mistakes and mishaps while drafting. Like, but this is a huge, like, that 20-year run of dominance, like I said, this is not to discredit him, but a huge part of that operation was, or which helped him make draft choices that kind of, like, left you scratching your head, or that, like, were sus, was due to Tom Brady making these guys look better than what they actually were. And now, since they don't have that at the quarterback spot, since Brady's departure, they have looked anemic and putrid offensively. I mean, that's just what it is. That's God honest truth. I mean, the Cam year, granted, and this is kind of like been a buildup. As you guys can tell, I've been building up to this. Because Cam's first year where Brady left and the Patriots had like 8 COVID outages, they were in salary cap hell, and they just brought in Cam Newton. Okay, I gave him a pass. Because I'm like, COVID year, COVID was weird. 2020 was a weird year. Gave him a pass. Mac Jones rookie year, they get to the playoffs. Mac Jones looks decent, looks competent. But you can kind of tell, like, high floor, low ceiling type of guy. They had a way that they won games. They had a particular way how they won games, and it wasn't them scoring 30, 35 points any given week. No. Like, they had a way. They had to run the football. They had to play like they were. They played with leads. They played good defense and so forth. But then over the last 2 years, it has progressively gotten worse. And last year, I called it out. I was like, hey, Matt Patricia is going to be the Patriots offense coordinator? What the hell? But then, like, hey, people's like, well, this is Belichick. Who are you to question Belichick? Oh, okay, cool. Didn't work out. Offense looks worse. I advise that, hey, Belichick should get a real OC. He goes back, get Bill O'Brien. So a lot of people thought process is, hey, like, Patriots obviously don't have, like, tremendous skill guys. But at least with Bill O'Brien, you'll see, like, a upgrade, right? No. Actually, they probably have gotten worse. Like, it's kind of hard to say that, and I thought I would never say that because I didn't think he'd get any worse than it was last year. But it actually has. Like, Mac Jones looks ass. He looks ass. And I don't think he's that bad of a football player. Like, I think the offensive line, ass. Like, the running game, they used to be able to hang their hat on that. The running game is just non-existent, right? Like, I literally watched the Patriots game. I watched the first quarter because after the first quarter, the game was over. But after the first, and like, going into the second quarter, I started asking myself, I'm like, what do the Patriots do well on offense? Like, in 2023, they check no damn boxes. They check no boxes at all. Like, they don't pass protect. They don't run block. They can't run the ball effectively. Like, they're not even good in the quick game. Like, they do nothing offensively well. Like, at all. So, I look at some of Belichick's contemporaries. When I say contemporaries, I mean like Andy Reid and Pete Carroll. And those guys are all around the same age, right? And I think I was questioning Pete Carroll a little bit towards the latter years of Russell Wilson days in Seattle. Boy, like, that, look how that has turned out, where Pete was like, Pete, you know, everybody was like, let Russ cook. Pete like, he needs some help in the kitchen. And then they go to separate ways. And since then, I mean, the Seahawks have been pretty good. But the key thing is with Andy and Pete, they have guys in the general manager spot, in the GM spot, whether it's John Schneider or Brent Veach, they trust, and they openly communicate about, like, hey, who should we draft and who should we trade for, and quite like it is a partnership. And I think the big thing with New England, or the big problem for so long, has been, okay, Bill is a good coach, right? Like, you can't take that away from Belichick. But in terms of a drafter, in terms of a talent evaluator in drafting certain needs, Belichick is ass. And his track record shows it. His track record shows it. He is not good at it. And this is kind of my nitpick thing that I do with the Patriots and Belichick, where they hire their guys. Like they hire their guys. Like, you, everywhere that the Belichick disciples have gone, they hire each other. And I just think it's like a whole thing of, like, with Bill, it's a certain arrogance, right? I think that he carries. You even see it in the post game pressers, where they ask him questions and he just like mumble, and he's just like grumpy. And I get, like, that's his thing, and I'm not saying he gotta be all smiley and goofy and up in a parade like Deion Sanders or anything, right? I don't think he don't have to be as charismatic and as entertaining as Deion is, right? But because Deion is magic at the mic and while talking to people, he's really marketable. But Belichick, he's just grumpy, and he said we got to start over. We got to redo things, and the reporter just asked him like, "Hey, so what do you mean by start over?" And he was like, "We just got to start over." Like, it's just the arrogance and the certain air that Belichick carries, and it kind of like trickles down to his coaches, where like you see guys like Matt Patricia, they go places and they act like they have arrived, and it's just like, you're not good at your job. Like, you're not good at your job, Josh. You see a similar thing with Josh McDaniels. Like, you're not good at your job. So with Belichick, I think that's the whole thing. That's the double-edged sword. Like, you want him as your coach, and he's a really good coach, and especially defensively, right? But in terms of drafting and acquiring talent, especially at certain spots offensively, he leaves a lot to be desired. And I think that's part of the problem. I think I look at the Patriots, you know, they're bad offensively. They don't have shit, right? But defensively, they got Matthew Judon and the kid Christian Gonzalez from Oregon, who they drafted, who's pretty good, but they're both hurt now. So two of your best players on your roster, quite frankly, are hurt and gone. For right now, I don't see this Patriots thing getting any better. Like, I don't see it. I don't see it getting any better. I just do not see it getting any better after this, because I don't know what their schedule looks like. And actually, can we mother pull up their schedule? We need to see the Patriots schedule, because I don't think it gets any better for this football team. So it doesn't, right? They play the Raiders, cool. Maybe they'll find a way to lose that one. I don't know. But then they play the Bills. Then they play the Dolphins again. The Commanders, the Colts, the Giants, the Chargers, the Steelers, Chiefs, Broncos, Bills, and then Jets. The remaining schedule is not that hard, right? Like, obviously Dolphins, Bills, that's going to be a good game. But, like, Raiders, Colts, Commanders, like, Broncos, these are all winnable games, but the Patriots look so bad. There's probably a few on there that they can win. But I think part of the problem, and you see it, is Bill is has too much control of what the roster looks like. Like, too much control. Like, literally, Every player that is on the Patriots, it's because Bill Belichick made the shot. He called the shot. Like, literally, every player. And with Andy Reid and Pete Carroll, Seahawks over the past couple years, they have hit on the draft. The Chiefs, they've had some guys that they have hit on the draft over the past couple years and so forth. So it's no surprise to me that those older coaches are kind of like trending in a different direction, and their teams have been pretty good over the past couple years and a few years. And with Bill, like, even with Brady leaving, like, the Patriots have progressively gotten worse. And with the Patriots, they used to be boring to watch, but now they're boring and they're bad. Like, the Spurs, the Patriots and the Spurs had that same kind of thing where, you know, we appreciated the Spurs basketball with Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili and Boris Diaw and Patty Mills. Like, we absolutely appreciated it, right, for what it is. And it was basketball beauty for a lot of people, but it was also boring at times. And that's the Patriots. They were once boring and methodical, and everything is so detail-oriented. But now, they're boring in their ass. Like, it's not a good combination. And I think Robert Kraft is going to – he's going to have to make some big decisions this coming offseason, whether it's, you know, you go separate ways with Belichick, I don't know, or you just relieve him of his general manager duties. But you like, if the Patriots finish, I don't know, 5-12 or 6-11, which I think it's a real possibility that could happen, you have to, if you're Rob Kraft, you got to look at it and like, hey, you know, you got to relinquish some GM duties from Belichick, or maybe just together all and together just move on, perhaps. I don't know. There was a big matchup that I wanted to cover quickly before I get to my top 10 teams list. And it was Texas and Oklahoma. And I haven't talked much Texas or like Oklahoma. Like I haven't talked much Big 12 football. When I've talked college football, I've been talking a lot about the Pac-12 and like some other teams like Michigan or Georgia or whatever. But I was really high on Texas. And it's kind of sad because I like this particular coach. I think he's had some great opportunities. And I think for in his own right, like he's a really brilliant, brilliant offensive mind. But Sark. Steve Sarkisian, and Texas lost a nail biter, a close one to Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Dillon Gabriel played absolutely phenomenal. Dillon Gabriel led Oklahoma on a game-winning drive, and basically they scored a touchdown. Not as time expired, but like there was like, I think like 10, 11 seconds left. So the game was over. It was a classic, the River Reviver. It was a classic. But I look at that, and I'm like, I thought, the win, when Texas beat Alabama, that gave them, in my opinion, their path to the playoff. I thought it gave them the easiest path to the playoff in the country, quite frankly. All they had to do was beat Oklahoma and win out in the Big 12, which I think, looking at it, between the Big 12 and the ACC, they are the two most... I would say those are the two weakest Power Five conferences that we have. The Big Ten is really good. SEC is kind of like a lot of mediocre, but I think the SEC is better than the Big 12. And then the Pac-12 is really, really deep and good. So I think the ACC or the Big 12, they're probably neck and neck for like weakest conference in the Power Five. And I just thought Texas, with all of their advantages in terms of recruiting, and the money, the oil money that they have, and Sark's, like this Texas team and this roster is better than Oklahoma's roster. Like, it is. I like, Oklahoma won, but I think if Texas and Oklahoma played 9 more times, I think Texas will probably win 7 out of the next 9 times with these two teams. Because I think Texas is that good. I think Texas is that talented. But that's kind of been the knock on Steve Sarkisian, where he's had a lot of talent, especially his days at Texas. He's had a lot of talent, and they continue to regress, or not regress, but they just underachieve, and they're just so underwhelming. Now, their playoff window, I'm not going to say it's closed. I think there's still a chance for them to get back into the playoff race, and for them to make the playoff. But boy, that is a tough one to swallow if you are a Texas fan or a Texas supporter, because all of the advantages is in Texas' favor. But I tweeted something on Saturday, and it was along the lines of like, hey, since I've been living, granted, Texas has all these advantages, Oklahoma, OU has been the superior program. Like, they've been the superior program since in my 21 years of living. They have been the superior program. So, a little surprising, but not really. It shouldn't be really surprising, given the fact that OU has been the better program for my 21 years. 21 going on 22 years. You guys know what time it is. If you are a new listener, it is top 10. It's top 10 teams time. Top 10 teams time. I don't know how fluent that sounds. That might be a tongue twister. Top 10 teams time. I don't like that. Well, it's time for you guys. It's time for me to give you guys my top 10 teams. That sounds better. We do this on a weekly basis. I spend a lot of time doing this. I get in trouble because I spend a lot of time doing this. I spend too much time doing this. I evaluate the hell out of these teams. I try my best to put together this list on a weekend, week out basis. I'm not going to lie to you guys. There were some teams that I really, really wanted to squeeze in there. Cincinnati was one of them. I think Cincinnati, they tend to start off really, really slow. And they pick it up. It takes them like September, middle of October. They start to pick it up. The Steelers were another team that I thought about putting on here, but I just think they're too reliant on that defense, and their offense just doesn't generate enough for me. But yeah, that's a disclaimer. Some of those teams are on the bubble. But let's start it. At 10, I have the Ravens. I was really trying to decipher, should I put Ravens, Bengals, or Steelers? I'm going to still go with the Ravens, given the fact that they've had some impressive division victories already, and they've been on the road. I think in that Pittsburgh game, that's just unfortunate. I thought that game was really, really winnable for Baltimore. I think Lamar, Lamar had the best zero touchdown performance I've seen from a quarterback, probably. Like, dude was like, had the best zero touchdown performance I've seen from a quarterback. He played really well. I think his receivers let him down. There were I think they had 8 drops, and I think 3 of them were touchdowns. Like, so basically, the Ravens receiver skill group guys, they dropped 21 points. They lost that game versus the Steelers. Lamar didn't have a bad throw in that fourth quarter as well. That essentially iced the game and gave the Steelers the game. But I still believe in this Ravens team. I'm going to take them at 10. At 9, I got the Seahawks. Just talking about the Seahawks. It's quite funny how things have worked out. Over the past 2 years since trading Russell Wilson, they've had some really good drafts. Pete has found like a fountain of youth. Their defense, like speaking of the drafts, they have found some steals on defense. Offensively, they have always been pretty potent, but I feel like they're just getting better. This Seahawks team is really dangerous. I got them at 9, but I got the Lions at 8. And I know the Seahawks beat the Lions, but I think, first, that was a pretty back-and-forth game. In that particular game, Goff threw a pick six that kind of put the line, that gave the game to Seattle. But I think if they were to play again, I would choose the Lions, and I think the Lions would steal. I think the Lions would steal and win that game. So I'm going to take the Lions. I love what Ben Johnson is bringing to this offense. Jared Goff playing some really good football right now. I don't think it's getting talked about as much as it should. This Lions team, they are getting better defensively. They were putrid. They were ass. They were bad defensively last year. Now they got some studs. We'll see. They're dealing with some injuries as well on defense, but we'll see how they handle that. But I like the Lions at 8. At 7, I had to drop them. I got the Cowboys. I still think they're a really good team. I think after this humiliating loss, a lot of people's stock, like the Cowboys' stock, is going to be really low. So you know what that means. When stock is low, that means you buy, right? That means you buy. So I'm going to buy the Cowboys stock because it's going to be low. Everybody then sold it. Everybody is just calling it wraps. I still think they're the third best team in the NFC. It's just that they're not on San Francisco or Philadelphia's level. Cowboys at 7. At 6, I got the Buffalo Bills. Now, they were peaking and treating. They were peaking towards, looking better. They went to London. They lost to a Jacksonville team that I feel like Jacksonville needed those 2 victories more than Buffalo, I would say. Buffalo, I feel like they're in good standing. They sent their message when they beat Miami. I like where Buffalo is trending though. They get Von Miller back. Now they lose Matt, they lose Milano. Season ending injury. They already lost Trey Wright to a season ending injury. So Buffalo defensively, it's getting a little scary because they're losing some really impactful guys at basically every level of their defense, right? So we'll see how they bounce back, but I got them at 6. At 5, I got the Jacksonville Jaguars. I've been waiting for this team to peak. Their division, Indianapolis, is a little bit more competitive than what I thought they would be. So Jacksonville got to watch out for that. But Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence, I'm waiting for Trevor Lawrence, and he kind of did it last year where the last 10 games of the season, Trevor Lawrence was arguably the best quarterback in football. He was definitely like top three in terms of like, and when he was balling his last 10 games of last year. I want to see this offense gain a little bit more rhythm and pace, but Jacksonville's getting there. I got them at 5. At 4, I got the Dolphins. Tua didn't really play great this week, but Mike McDaniel is an absolute genius. He's taken the league by storm. I like this Dolphins team. I just don't think they're on these other three levels and on these other three teams' level. At 3, I got the Chiefs. Great defensively. I love what they have been able to do and compile over the first 5 games of the year defensively. But I still worry about their offense. I still think they need to make a trade or a move before the trade deadline to buffer this passing game. But they're continue to find a way to win. That's the name of the game. I have them at 3. At 2, I think the Eagles, I have the Eagles at 2. They haven't hit their stride yet. That's what I'm going to say. Eagles haven't hit their stride yet. I think they play the Cowboys coming up pretty soon. So we'll see. That'll be a good test for them. They played well versus a really good Rams team. So I got the Eagles at 2. And then at 1, you know, I got the Niners. I think this team has no holes. I think this 49ers team has no holes in it. They're the most complete team in football. They're arguably the most talented team in football. They play with a certain level of confidence and swagger that I particularly like. So I got them at 1. Great performance over this past weekend versus the Cowboys. But I hope you guys enjoyed this episode and this latest rendition of the Isaiah Kid podcast. Always remember 2 choices, 1 decision. I am out. Peace, deuces. I hope you guys enjoy it.